Welcome back. It's episode 85 of the TV Talk Machine. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, across the bay, in the home of the world champion Golden State Warriors, perhaps for a second time, question mark, it's Tim Goodman, chief TV critic of The Hollywood Reporter. Hi, Tim.
Hey, go Dubs.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Pretty good TV show. I enjoy it.
Still the best show on TV.
Pretty enjoyable. No doubt. I was trying to explain this to somebody who doesn't like basketball, but I don't like basketball either particularly, but... they play a style of basketball that is fun to watch, and of course so much basketball, especially NBA basketball, they don't really try very hard until it matters, and it matters. So everybody's trying really hard, and it's very entertaining. So
yes, it's I barely survived the playoffs getting to the finals, because as I've said before, I think the best teams are in the West. And so it was kind of a slog, and getting through OKC was like almost stopped my heart like 10 times. So I'm out of wine and Xanax, and I was happy that our first game against the Cavs was kind of a cakewalk. So that was nice.
Yeah, I was listening. I was picking up some takeout and listening to the radio call of the Warriors, and I was struck by how amazing. I imagine that I could do like baseball play by play if I really tried.
Right.
I listened to, in this case, it was Tim Roy, the voice of the radio voice, local radio of the Warriors. I cannot even imagine doing that job, because he is describing things as they happen on a fast paced basketball court. But what really struck me about it was that they were also doing analysis of what, you know, what was happening, and like when somebody would substitute in, they would say, you know, here's why they're doing it. They're getting a smaller lineup because of this matchup and all of that. And what the reason I thought that was really interesting is that when I went back to, especially the TNT coverage, we'll see how the ESPN coverage of the finals is. That's what struck me, is I feel like on television, what they've decided to do is not analyze and sort of let you watch what happens. They don't describe what happens, and they do very little analysis. They do some sort of judging of like, that was really good, or I thought that was really bad, but beyond that, I don't get a sense. I'm surprised, coming from being a baseball fan and where people actually do talk tactics, a lot of the announcers, about why you make a particular move, I've been kind of amazed that the basketball broadcasts are, at least the ones that I've seen, are really bad at that. They don't give you any or very much analysis of why things are happening. And I was, you know, I don't know, maybe basketball announcing is just behind there, or maybe the basketball audience doesn't care about that stuff. But I found it fascinating when I was in the car listening on the radio, and I really found it missing when I came back to my TV and watched the national broadcast.
Yeah, they were really slow on the pickup on a lot of that stuff. I mean, it was, and that's been the case. And you know, I watch every Warriors game, and usually when it's the local folks, you really get I think they're just great, you get a really big picture of what they're doing defensively and offensively. And so when it goes into a national stage and you get the national announcers, they're like either wrong, clearly wrong on a couple of cases, or they're just not picking up on it. And there's little things, like last night I was like, okay, why are they not talking about the fact that LeBron is guarding Curry? I mean, that's I wouldn't call that a mismatch, because LeBron is, you know, the best player in the world, but that was unexpected. And it wasn't just on switch outs, which they said after the game that they switched on him. I'm like, no, he was trailing him a couple times. And the point was, they were trying to beat him up a little bit. And they took him out of his game a little bit, because he got a little bit, I'm sure people are excited about this basketball analysis, but he got, he's competitive. And so he was kind of trying to like knock back on LeBron, and I kept yelling at the screen, please don't do that. You're going to get hurt. He's a mountain. So don't.
But
do that.
I mean, those are great personalities and kind of a great story that's unfolding. And that's the part that baffled me, is like,
yeah, it wasn't much mention of it at all.
I don't love like the Fox baseball coverage of the World Series. It's not very good, but at least they seem to have a better sense of storytelling. They have their storylines that they want to follow.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And with the basketball stuff, I don't know, again, just seeing it as basically an outsider, I'm a little surprised that they don't try to do some more storytelling. They just sort of let you, if you know about it, you can see it happening, but they don't talk about it. And,
well, I'll tell you one short, I think hopefully funny basketball story about hitting to your point about talking on the radio and play by play announcing, how hard it is for basketball. Way back, I mean, Greg Popp is fantastic on the radio when he does Warriors, because I don't listen to the radio anymore, so I don't even know if he's still doing on the radio. But he used to, and there was a fill-in who I can't even remember his name. He was also a fill-in local anchor, and he wasn't very good. But a friend of mine and I would listen to every Warriors game on our long commute from Palo Alto up to San Francisco, and we would just die laughing because this guy was terrible. You could not on the radio follow what was happening because it was so fast, right? Just exactly what you were saying.
Yeah.
So there would be things like, you know, they'd have like Chris Mullen, right? Mullen gets it and it's like, Evan Robinson dunks. And you're like, what? Didn't Chris Mullen have the ball? And there was always like Warriors bring it down. And then they're like, Knicks a breakaway. And I'm like, what happened? So he was terrible at it. Yeah. We just started laughing because you would think you're playing it in your mind's eye. And then all of a sudden, it was, you know, you think the Warriors are going to go for a layup and then someone's dunking on the other end of the court. And you're like, okay, maybe we should just like not listen to this.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough game to analyze it so fast. But anyway, basketball talk over. Boop. What other shows? I read your review of The Dresser, which I had a moment of thought of like, wait a second, wasn't this a movie? And the answer is it was a play and a movie, but now it is a Starz. Is it just a movie, TV movie?
It's just a movie. Yeah. Uh-huh. And they filmed it in a theater, and it's shot almost like a play. They do some different camera work to make it a little bit more dimensional and less shot like a play. But it was brilliant. I think if you have Stars, you should definitely try to find it, and I'm sure it'll probably pop up somewhere for non-Stars fans. It's just really great. There's a, you know, it aired on the BBC, and then maybe that's the backdoor entry to find it last year. But it was a co-production, and they finally did it this year. And it was Ian McKellen, and it's just the acting is like just stellar. So it's Anthony Hopkins is in it, and those two together are amazing. And just Sarah Lancashire from Happy Valley, and it's just like wow, the cast is amazing, and the writing is phenomenal, and the issues that they touch are multidimensional. Touching on so many different things. It's just, you know, no wonder it was such an acclaimed play. It just, it's really a piece of art, and they did a very good job. It was heartwarming.
It's like going to a great revival of a classic play with star actors. Basically.
Right, and you could tell, like, it's not going to get very good ratings, and you know, the only thing, and that was to me, that was the interesting thing for me in the review, is like, okay, the only way you make this is because you love culture. Hmm. You're not trying to make a hit. It's only a one-off movie. It's going to cost you some money. You have all these big actors. The only reason you do that is because you want to see those actors who never have actually worked together, which is kind of phenomenal, do that material. And so I thought, wow, that's nice. Every now and then something's just done for the culture sake, not for profit.
Well, the in Britain in general, and the BBC in particular, have this history of doing, theater culture is so powerful in England, and the BBC does these productions of stage performances. I remember watching the Hamlet with David Tennant, which was great, and Patrick Stewart. It was great.
Yeah.
And when can you see Doctor Who and Captain Picard do Shakespeare? It's, you know, on the BBC. That's the answer. So so that feeds into this, I imagine, too, is that this is part of the reason the BBC produced this. And probably these actors were not getting paid particularly well, but this is part of their theater. You know, it's a chance for them to do theater and have it reach a wider audience through television. So that's cool.
Yeah. And that's exactly why they did it. Stars, even though it's a co-production, that was clearly fueled from the BBC and its rich tradition in doing theater. Yeah.
Yeah. They paid for the tea, maybe Stars.
They paid for the tea. I'll be happy to hear that.
Something about that. Hey, it's England. That tea can be expensive. There's a lot of tea there. You also reviewed something a little less highfalutin, Feed the Beast, starring David Schwimmer, TV's Ross. Everything I've heard about this from everybody is that it is not so good. Is it not so good?
It is generously bad.
You mean it's generous with its badness? It's got lots of bad to share?
Yeah, well, me being
or
generous,
you're being
is
generous
that it's bad. Yeah,
saying,
I mean,
just
it could be
it's
heinous.
Bad.
I mean, I could have said it's heinous. This airs Sunday on AMC.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And that was the sort of the twin pillars of my review, which was like, why is this so bad? Like, how did it get so bad? And what was AMC thinking? It's very much a broadcast television series. It's just that bad. The writing is terrible. The cliches and the shallow character development and everything you've seen up and down, all the tropes you've ever seen come out of here. The writing, it's just unbelievable. It really took a lot to get through that first hour. Like, I couldn't believe how bad it was for the first 15 minutes. I knew in the first 15 minutes I would never watch this show, because you can't overcome that many flaws. I mean, that you don't need a professional critic to tell you when you see that many red flags that something is terrible. They'll never recover if they can't get all those things right in a row. If you're off on one or two things, forget it. And the two, Jim Sturgess, the other actor, he's playing in a different show than Schwimmer, completely different show. And it just flips me out. And I only got through maybe half of the second one. And I was just like, you know what, this isn't worth my time. And I think that was part of my review. People will not put up with a time waster like that, because the time is precious, as we've talked about many times. So it's just, I don't understand it. And like, what were they thinking at AMC? That's the bigger thing. Like, who didn't see that no part of this worked? Even the stuff about creating a restaurant where they want to make this sort of food porn. Two guys have a dream of making a restaurant. Even the editing on where they made the food was like ham-fisted. Hmm. Oh, hey, look, a food reference. Ham-fisted. I should have put that in my review. So
you shouldn't make ham with a fist. It's terrible. You just don't do that. That's not how you make ham. This is a tangent that I hadn't expected, but the thought occurs to me. I think we can declare David Schwimmer the loser of the six Friends cast members in terms of their post-Friends output. Can't we? I was thinking about this just now. Like, Schwimmer, this is another, you know, sort of a disappointing foray for Schwimmer, who I had heard always wanted to just like be a director or something, that he wasn't even going to try to be so much of an actor anymore. But, you know, Matthew Perry's had a bunch of trials, but he's in The Odd Couple, right? Which got picked up for another season. So you got some CBS sitcom money rolling in, I guess. You've got Matt LeBlanc, who is on Top Gear on the BBC that just premiered last week, and also Episodes has gotten...
And he was good in Episodes.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, I saw him interviewed on Graham Norton as a part of the Top Gear launch, and I just thought that's a guy who's kind of got his priorities right. He seems to be like... I think you got to come to terms, right? If you're on one of these shows like Friends or Seinfeld or something like that, that it's going to stick with you forever. And he seems to be able to poke fun at his own personality and his own image and all those things. So I think that's a win. And then you got Courtney Cox did Cougar Town. I don't know what she's doing now, but that was a nice long running show. And who else do we have? Jennifer Aniston, you know, is, I don't know, is she still America's Sweetheart? Maybe. Let's say yes.
Maybe.
And many movies and all of that. And who does that leave us with? Lisa Kudrow, who is always in things and did the comeback and all of that. But then there's David Schwimmer, who gives us Feed the Beast.
I think that he might be okay in another sitcom if he was playing kind of that befuddled, you know,
it's hard to see
sad
him.
Zach.
That would be like quite an ego blow for him, though, too, right? To go back to sitcoms. I don't know. He just strikes me as somebody who thinks he's better than that. But
I think part of it is picking the role. I think when he was on O.J. Simpson, the FX series on O.J., People versus O.J. Simpson, he was just in such a put in such a terrible position to be that you know, cast in that, and he shouldn't have taken that role. He was just so like milquetoast in that. And he was just so weirdly droll and kind of clueless the whole way. It wasn't a good fit for him. I could see why he took Feed the Beast, and that's why it's so disappointing that the other actor seems to be acting in a completely different show. Because I think that David, because you brought this tangent up, but I think David Schwimmer, I think he wants to play something more depressing, right?
Yeah.
And so he's really depressed in this, because his wife has been killed in a car accident, and his son has apparently witnessed that. Oh, I'm sorry, hit and run. And his son witnessed it and doesn't speak. So he's had a son for a year who hasn't said a word in a year, and he's still clinging to this, you know, the Schwimmer's character still clinging to this wife, really down. And so such a really bummer role. And then his friend, who burned down the restaurant that his wife worked at, who was also a chef. He gets out of jail and comes back in his life, but he's all like buddy sitcom, jokey joke with quips. And then you're looking at like Schwimmer kind of wants to, he wants another six episodes of being in the tank. And the other guy doesn't. It doesn't work at all. But at the same time, I wouldn't have wanted to watch six more episodes of David Schwimmer being depressing. So I don't know what he's going to do.
I got a tangent to the tangent, only to say that I appreciated, and I think you did too, Alan Sepinwall wrote a piece about being a TV critic for 20 years.
Yes.
And how different television was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it's so true. And he just lists off a bunch of things of like what it was like 20 years ago. And, you know, it is amazing how much has changed in that time. But one of the things that struck me about it was 20 years ago, Seinfeld was on and somebody pointed out Julia Louis-Dreyfus still killing it 20 years later.
20 years later.
How about that?
She is by far, well, she's one of the greatest comic actresses, you know, in history. She's going to go down as, I mean, she's amazing. She's doing such great work on Veep, and she's been in good in everything she's been in, you know?
Yeah.
The New Adventures of Old Christine. Yeah, she was great in that. Like, so she's good in everything. But yeah, Alan Spies was funny. I always try not to look back that far because it's, you know, I think depressing. But he and I came in, I think we're still unclear whether it – I had maybe started the Beat, but wasn't at press tour when he started. So it was like 96 or 97 or 97, 98 that I started, one of those years. So I'm at about 19 or 20 years as well. And I, you know, I've known him since then. Well, since we were newbies on the press tour. I do think we came in on the first year. But yeah, we had totally different approaches to it. Alan's born to like, watch multiple episodes and really gorge on this stuff. And I was like, why is this industry broken? I was much more interested in finding out that, but, and both of us have carved careers out of that kind of very same thing. But, he's great. And he and Dan Feinberger now is with us, of course, at, THR. We're all going to be at a panel on, ATX Festival and talking about Twitter and how Twitter has changed criticism and how we deal with it online and stuff. It should be fun.
Yeah, for all of those people who are going to the ATX Festival in Austin next week.
Yes, come say hi if you're actually there, for sure.
Absolutely, and friends of the podcast, David Lohr is going to be there, Moises Chouillan is going to be there. Lots of interesting TV people will be there, and that should be a good time.
I think Moises and David and I are going to try to get some queso and brisket and beer.
Do it. You won't be disappointed. It's never disappointing in Austin.
Never.
Get some beer and some brisket.
Oh, yes. Barbecue.
That's so good. maybe next year. Maybe I'll go next year.
You should. I wish you would have come through.
The timing was tough this year because I got Apple stuff basically like the next day. So, but I hope to do that soon. Want to do some letters?
Sure. Let's do that.
Do some letters. We'll tell people the secret. Actually, before I do the letters and tell people the secret, I'll mention something else that's big that's going on here, which is a lot of people have asked about ways to we do the occasional ad read, but a lot of people have asked about ways that most podcasts, kind of the way the podcasting works, you just have to give away the content. You can't, you know, it's hard to do like a login or something like that. People have tried that, but basically podcasts are free and some people want to support podcasts directly. I set up a way to do that for all the Incomparable shows. There's a membership system now. You sign up, you can give us some money monthly or just an annual pledge, and support goes here's what's different about it. Support goes to the podcast that you want to support on the network. So woohoo! If you love TV Talk Machine, to the incomparable.com/members and sign up for a membership there, and you get to fill out a form that says which of the shows on the Incomparable network do you want to support. And if you listen to more than one show, you can check those boxes and support them, and your support will be split among them. If you only want to support this show, this is the one that you listen to, just check the TV Talk Machine box and press save. And after the fees are taken out and stuff like that, all the rest of the money goes to the TV Talk Machine. So it's not something where, you know, basically I take the money and give Tim 10 cents. we will split that money, but that will go straight to the TV Talk Machine instead of going to like other shows and stuff and our cruel network overlord, who is also me. So check it out. If you want to support us, you get some bonuses for it. there's some extra content that we'll make over the course of the year. And there's like a live bootleg feed of my Incomparable podcast that's there, and some other extra stuff is available too. So check it out. There are contribution levels for $5, $10, and $20 a month, and their annual equivalents at theincomparable.com/members. So there, if you would like to do that, you may.
I like that. And as I said, so I think very, very smoothly
on Twitter. Yes,
on Twitter, I said, "Give me all your money."
Yeah, I appreciated that.
It's really good, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's good.
I'm really a salesman.
That's sales. That's
sales.
That's you're born to.
I
use
all caps.
So now I'm gonna. It's time for the secret part of the podcast where we review real. Since Tim's going to be in Austin next week and I'm not, we're not going to do a podcast next week. Except we are. We're going to pre-tape it, so it's going to be one of those fraudulent podcasts we do, where next week's episode will be us essentially right after we record this week's episode. But there will be an episode next week. Don't be afraid.
Still be international, worldwide release.
Yeah, we will release it there. You'll be eating brisket and beer just like last year. I think we did this last year, and yet magically your voice will appear on the internet.
Magically, I will not be drunk and bloated.
Simultaneously being drunk and bloated. So
right,
that's like quantum physics happening.
I love
there.
The magic there. Mm-hmm. I love that. You know what? If we had called this podcast "Drunk and Bloated," we would have people contributing lots of money.
Money. That's true.
Something to think about
to increase the
change.
Bloat. To
as a name
boost
change.
The bloat. All right. Hey, we got our Dean from the 707 travel update.
Okay.
He's watching It's Always Sunny in Pennsylvania, but maybe not Philadelphia. He also went to Patty's, and he says happily, unlike fake Patty's. So he's got a picture of him in front of Patty's with lots of neon signs in the window, Patty's Pub. So
that's nice.
Good job, Dean.
I like that he sends pictures, because there could be the thought like, no one travels this much.
Yeah, right.
He's putting one over on us, but no, he's got pictures.
No, he's got photographic evidence. So we have
people who will go everywhere to Ceausescu's grave.
Yeah.
You cannot stop us.
No.
You can only hope to contain
us. That is my single favorite thing from the old TV talk machine was the picture at Ceausescu's grave. Because why wouldn't you want to stand on the grave of a dictator with a picture of a podcast logo?
Yeah. I think we need to restart that, by the way.
Yeah.
That's something that we need to really think about.
Right. If people want to take pictures of themselves with the podcast logo, print out a copy or put it on your phone or whatever, or something else signifying the podcast at historic sites or interesting locations, please do send them in, tweet them at us, and we'll talk about them on the podcast. Sure, why not? And if you can go, if you're near Ceausescu's grave,
it's been done though.
It has been done. That's true.
It was not easy.
Find another dictator.
It was not easy. Yeah.
So we've got a little tweet storm from Scott in the 615. He sent us many tweets in a row.
Woo.
And this is related to news, so I think it's worth us talking about this.
Okay.
So he says he links to a story that interviewed Jack Bender, who directed the last two episodes of Game of Thrones. And in it, Bender says they're only planning on doing 7 episodes next year. So which we've heard them talk about before. The producers threatened earlier this season this idea that they would only have, after this season, they only have 13 episodes left, and they would do 7 and then 6 short seasons and then be done with Game of Thrones. So what Scott in the 615 says is, it looks like Game of Thrones is slowing down, not ramping up. Next season they're only doing 7 episodes. Can you elaborate on why you wanted 13 episodes? Game of Thrones was doing 10 55 minute episodes a year. That's 520 total minutes. That's pretty close in total running time to 13 42 minute episodes. There's some math going on here. And then also, this brings up the question, Orphan Black, Mr. Robot, Better Call Saul, Fargo, these are all 10 episode seasons. Should they be doing more? Scott in the 615. So a lot going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with talking about Game of Thrones. I'm starting to suspect that they have a bunch of contracts with actors that and I don't know if this is true or not, but this is just my guess. Is like, it sounds to me like what they really want to do is shoot 13 episodes next year and call it a day and then spool them out over 2 seasons. I don't know if that's actually their plan or not, but that's the only explanation I can get, unless these are all going to be jam-packed episodes, like bulked up episodes that are longer than normal or something. I don't really understand why else they would choose to do 7 and then 6 rather than, let's say, 10 and then 10. What do you think?
Well, I can only hope that because they, you know, like Lost, they know the ending now, that they're ending. I can only hope that they're going to get there. And of course, the story can live on. And there is definitely, as George R.R. Martin has said, there are spinoff possibilities. And I think HBO would be foolish not to do that. But
do you really think there's only going to be 13 episodes worth of story left after this season?
No. And that's the answer to the other question is, you know, and it doesn't play into those other series he mentions, because I think those other series handled how they spooled their story much better, because this is a much bigger story. And it's funny because I talk about this all the time, so I do get feedback on this, and people are like, but the episodes that we do get, the 10, are jam-packed with things. And I'm like, and they're covering lots of books. But I also hear that, as book readers say, they're leaving a lot out, et cetera, et cetera. But my point is neither of those. My point is that in the hour or whatever that I'm given from HBO, the storytelling is so massive in the entire series that what happens is not happening this season as much, which is I like that it's breathing and moving quickly. The previous seasons, particularly the last two prior to this one, you know, we've talked about this. You would get 2 or 3 minutes with a character just so people could not forget that character. There's so many of them. It's like, let's go to Dorne for a minute, you know, and then let's go to Marine for 2.5 minutes, and maybe you come back for 30 seconds or 45 seconds or a minute. And my feeling is, man, if you're really interested in that Daenerys storyline, she's really moving slow. When is she going to get back to Westeros? Because she is really moving slow. And that's what it created to me. You have so many characters, you have to go back and touch base with them. And the way they did it was really quickly. And that didn't breathe. It doesn't give chance. I mean, that could be a great 90 seconds of dialogue or action or something like that. But on the other hand, you know, we lost full characters for like seasons and things like that. And so, you know, like where was Bran a couple of seasons ago? You know, this is like traveling the world. But it's to me, 13 episodes would have allowed those 90-second scenes to be 5-minute scenes, to be et cetera. And then you feel it, that each episode is breathing, and you move things out into the next episode, into the next one. You just stretch it out storytelling. It's not that hard to figure out, but the compactness is not good storytelling. I know why they did it. It's just not good storytelling, because it's like, yep, we checked in with Daenerys, and now we're back out. See you next week. And she had not this season, but she's had several times where you're like, okay, she's been on screen for 3 minutes. Okay, great. And then 3 minutes next week. So it's 2 weeks, 2 chapters, 6 minutes of screen time is not enough to tell that story. So that was what the thing that was driving me crazy.
Well, they've got, I wonder, some of it is like they've got the kids and the kids are growing up. And so like you can't, there's only so much you can do in a season, even if you have 13 episodes. And so, and even, I mean, the way the books are written, the way the story is written, it's too much to tell. So you either fast forward through it really fast, or you put it in super slowdown mode, at which point you run into trouble, because now, are you going to be able to tell your whole story? Are you going to be able to get to the end? It turns out they are, because it's been a wild success, but I could see why they rushed, but it becomes a weird kind of set of pacing problems. So I still wonder what's motivating this, and if it really is like we only have 13 episodes of story, mm-hmm. at the pace we want to tell, or if it is something more logistic related, or like I said, or what if they change their game, and it's, you know, it's these 13 episodes are actually longer. You know, what if they try something different in there? Because it could be any length, essentially, for HBO. So what if they're all 90 minutes long or something like that? What if they just kind of blow it out and do it that way and think that that's a better way to give people more momentum through a season? I don't know. But it's curious, right, that at the height of its success, they're starting to talk about giving us less of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and my column last week where I was, you know, in love with it, I mean, that still stands. So whatever they're going to do, I'm going to be fine with it.
Yeah,
I want more. So
yeah, I agree.
I'm not happy to hear that there's less when I want more, but, you know, what am I going to do about it?
Yeah.
So
I guess we'll find out. My guess is that somewhere HBO is like, stop talking about this. Let us get through, you know, so that at the end of the season, they can make some triumphant announcement about what's going to happen next. It's like, stop. Quiet, everybody.
All right.
Tell Jeff Bender to stop talking about what we're doing next year with Game of Thrones. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, it's also natural to just say, I love it. Give me more of it, right? More, more, more. Give me more. And narratively, I think Game of Thrones really does deserve it too. So been loving the season though. Still going to say that. They're moving forward now. I mean, at this pace, maybe they could finish their story in 13 episodes. Things are actually happening, which is great.
I kind of leave it to the wind and say, I guess there's a bigger picture here that I don't understand. Yeah. But I'm hoping that those guys who've done such a magnificent job so far are going to keep doing that.
All right, we got one from Dave in the plus 44.
Woohoo!
Across the pond in Old Blighty.
Yes.
Dave says, for both Tim and Jason, Jason likes shows with timey-wimey shenanigans, yes. 12 Monkeys, did either of you watch it at all? And if so, did you stick around until it got good, which in my opinion was about partway through season one? Did you do 12 Monkeys?
I watched the pilot, I believe, and
left it there
after, and then I was done.
I didn't even watch it. I love that movie so much that I... the original reviews of it were all so middling that I just didn't even bother sampling it. So I've heard from some people who watched it through that they did like it. It's just not something that I've gone to revisit. And I kind of love that movie and think that's a perfect movie, the Terry Gilliam movie, in so many ways that I kind of am reluctant to see another spin on it. But
yep. And I think that can be done. But my thing is, I don't want to ever do another slog through shows that I'm talking to you, Bloodline. I just don't want to slog through something that may be really good in the end or cumulatively, but is more effort than I think is worth it getting
to get
there. Yeah. So that's I'm not doing that anymore. There's too many choices.
Here's one from David in the 610. Has Tim seen Brain Dead from the creators of The Good Wife yet?
No, I have not. And I probably will not be the one reviewing that, which is awesome.
This is a summer show on CBS. It's your Under the Dome replacement, sort of.
I can guarantee you that's a June 13th, and Dan is reviewing that. I would be willing to say live on this podcast that I will never ever watch that show.
All right,
so there you have it.
Okay, that's a promise.
I feel freed up. Think of all the time I just saved.
I know, it's amazing.
Yes.
All right, here's one from Donnie in the 206.
Okay,
this one's for me, although you know, you could jump in if you want.
Is it a fact checking thing?
Podcast. No, it's not. Thank goodness. There are probably more of those coming. I'd like to hear Jason's thoughts on season two of The Flash and the state of the CW's DC universe in general. Rarely have I seen the second season of a show lose everything that made the first season great, but The Flash pulled it off by replacing season one's Silver Age comic book geekiness with enough angst, murder, and nonsensical plotting to fill a Zack Snyder movie. Add in that terrible time travel cliffhanger at the end, and suddenly I'm dreading the return of what used to be one of my favorite shows. In fact, as much as people praise the CW for finding success with superhero shows, things aren't as rosy as they seem. The Flash has lost its way, Arrow went off the rails after season two, and neither Supergirl or Legends of Tomorrow ever fully came together. Do you think the Berlantiverse team is stretched too thin, and can anything save the Flash?
I would like to hear your thoughts on that, actually.
So I'm going to dispute a couple of the points. Arrow did go off the rails after season two. I would argue Arrow is kind of back on the rails now. I think that this last season of Arrow was stronger than The Flash for certain. I think Legends of Tomorrow was an unmitigated disaster where it never made any sense. It was never the only thing fun in it would be occasionally they would get in a bar fight. Like literally, I would rather that be bar fights of tomorrow than anything else. And the showrunner did an interview where he basically said, yeah, we do a time travel show, but we don't have any rules for our time travel. And if you care about rules and internal, essentially what he said is, if you care about a show having logical internal consistency, you're a nerd and shut up. And it's like, no, you can have your time travel rules be as ridiculous as you want them to be, but you got to have some rules or otherwise nothing makes sense. And that's Legends of Tomorrow. But I would dispute Supergirl being off the rails because I actually think Supergirl did come together. I think the last half dozen episodes of Supergirl were quite good. And the early ones are okay. They're not terrible, but it got better as it went along. And I think that it had some of the sunny happiness that The Flash had in season one. But I agree. Season two of The Flash was kind of a disaster. It was disappointing. There's some fun things that are in it. Doppelgangers and stuff like that, and how they brought back Tom Cavanaugh's character after killing him in the first season, because it's a different one. It's a parallel universe version, of course. How could it not be? And he was a different character, and Tom Cavanaugh got to do some different stuff with that, a variation of his previous character, and I thought that was great. But the villain was a disaster, because they clearly had... They either had no plan, or like the what I said about Legends of Tomorrow, they just didn't care that he had no plan. And a villain who has no objective is not a very good villain, and that was the case with Zoom, the season two villain on The Flash. And I will dispute the idea of the terrible cliffhanger at the end. I actually think I know where they're going with that, and I think that's something that they've been talking about on that show since the first season finale. And I'm sure it will get wiped away in one episode next season before they get back to normal, because that seems to be par for the course for them. But I hope they find their place with the Flash, because they got a lot of really great pieces on that show. They just need to put it together again, because season one, you're right, season two lost its way. I agree with that. I was really disappointed with how it ended. But hopefully they'll put it together. I think they got totally waylaid by having to launch Legends of Tomorrow. I'm going to blame everything on Legends of Tomorrow, because they ended up not being able to set up their seasons, either Flash or Arrow, because they instead had to set up the premiere of the spinoff show, and it was bad. And literally, it was bad, too. The show was bad.
You've been very...
So, there.
Yeah, very clear about that.
There you go. Yeah, No, Legends of Tomorrow, man. I watched it, too. I watched every episode of it. And the last few in Fast Forward, it was terrible.
Oh, my God. Love it.
So, I don't know what's happening. Greg Berlanti, I have a lot of faith in him, but they stumbled this year. I hope they get it together. I hope they don't think that they're doing great work, because they weren't this year. Oh, well. I got one more for you, and then we'll break until our fake break until next week. Real break for listeners, fake break for us. This is from Bill in the 610. This is a great one. Hi, Jason. I don't mean to feed Tim's phobia of the fauna down under, but after recent discussions, the following sentence kind of jumped out at me on the Google News page. Cindy Waldron, 46, was swimming at Thornton Beach near Cairns, I think it's pronounced, in Queensland State, when a crocodile dragged her away. Now, you might think this proves Australia is a dangerous place crawling with murderous animal life, but it turns out the unfortunate woman in the story just exercised poor judgment. Local MP and former crocodile farmer Warren Encht explained, "This is a tragedy, but it was avoidable," he told reporters. "If you go swimming at 10 o'clock at night, you're going to get consumed." Apparently, not getting eaten by a critter in Australia is easy peasy, as long as you don't do something crazy pants like swim at 10 p.m. So relax, Tim. Bill in the 610.
Wow. That was very good. Fantastic. I'm still not going there. No. And I think totally drop bears safe. Are real.
Yep. They that's the double bluff. They tell you they're not real, and then you go there and you're killed by a drop bear.
They drop on you. In silence.
Yeah.
Like us little furry assassins.
Yeah. And if you run away from them into the surf after 10 p.m., you're chum at that point. You're going to get consumed.
Yeah. I am never going to Australia.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so hi, Australia. Thanks. You can send us your letters of anger, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can tweet at us at TVTM, or I'm at Jay Snell and Tim is at Bastard Machine on Twitter. You can visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. And those are all the ways that you can reach us. We won't read your letters if you send them next week, because that one's going to be a fake episode that we record in a few minutes, but we'll read them in a future episode, I'm sure.
Yes.
All right, Tim, this is the part where I'm going to say have a good weekend to you, and then we're going to lie and do another episode. But to everybody out there, have a good weekend, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week with that pre-taped episode that we're going to record soon. Bye, Woo-hoo! Everybody.
Bye.